citizens of New York. Perceptions of the world has been protected by a group of extraordinary men and women who have dedicated themselves to fighting crime. The world's mightiest fortress.
He has powers far beyond the capabilities of mere earth.
In the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, no, it's a duck.
Welcome to the Marvel Miscellaneous Rejects, the beginning of Percolated Media's look at the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe.
If you consider it, Kick-Ass, we'd be honored to have you join us.
Join Garrett.
Every duck's got his limit. And you scum have pushed me over the line.
Matt.
I'd appreciate it enormously if you could just leave us in peace until I finish this lovely pint of Guinness.
And Adam.
What I don't know is what the hell I'm doing here.
As they start their comic book movie dive by reviewing the misfits of the Marvel movies.
Oh, don't scare me with that hocus pocus, boy.
Included in this part of the Marvel retrospective is Howard the Duck.
It's Howard, thank you.
Dr. Mordred.
I thought you'd never get back. This guy says he's on a mission from his master to kill you.
His master's dead.
Man-Thing.
I guess they didn't fill you in all the way.
The Kick-Ass films.
Just because you dress like us doesn't mean that you can be like one of us.
Big Hero 6.
Hello, I am Baymax, your personal healthcare companion.
And the Kingsman movies.
You break the law, you pay the price.
Be sure to keep checking the site, as the boys will, from time to time, come back to continue going through the entire slate of Marvel movies up until they catch up on the MCU proper.
Thanks for not giving up on me.
So sit down and open up your favorite Marvel comic, Percolated Media listeners.
Pick up the cover of Life Magazine, man! Life Magazine? Life Magazine went out of business, you fucking idiot!
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast, Marvel Retrospective, begins now.
Are we going to stand around here all day, or are we going to fight?
Argyle, released February 1st, 2024. Budget is around $200 million. No final notes or confirmation. That's because this movie made $96 billion worldwide, and this was directed once again by Matthew Vaughn. We might as well call this retrospective the Matthew Vaughn subgroup, because we've done Kick-Ass, we've done all the Kingsman movies, which he directed, and now we have this. I feel like we have to just go back and include Layer Cake and Stardust just for the sake of completionism.
Please.
And we will do class again at some point.
Please, no. I really don't want to watch Stardust again. And, you know, I was thinking about it. Coming into this one, which wasn't getting good buzz at all, as we discussed last week, the reviews trashed it, so I wasn't really looking forward to it, but you take that run of movies he did, Kick-Ass, X-Men First Class, and to a lesser extent, but we all had good things to say about it, the first Kingsman movie. I'm starting to feel like that was the fucking fluke. Those three movies were the fluke, and everything else was Stardust, and we'll talk about this one, but the last two Kingsman movies, all three of us haven't really had good things to say about. He's a one-trick pony, and that's pretty much it.
I think that bag of tricks you mentioned, and you're starting to see it in this movie, it's like the same bag over and over.
Yeah. Well, another thing too, Matt, and I didn't realize this. I'm watching this and I'm like, God damn, is it just me or does it feel more tame? What is going on here? Matthew Vaughn is one of these directors who likes to shock. So why isn't there anything shocking going on? I didn't see till later. It's a fucking PG-13 movie.
Yeah, that answers your question of why it feels toned down.
Yeah.
I mean, the violence, it is considerably toned down because it's PG-13, although you can get away with a lot more now than you could if this was made in like 2002. But speaking of this thing getting made, that was a big question with everything that was happening with COVID and the Kingsman underperforming. This was announced before The Kingsman had come out. Granted, The Kingsman was supposed to come out well before it actually did, but Vaughn said, yeah, my next movie is going to be this big ensemble spy film because he can't seem to get out of this genre. And that's one of the more, I would say, disheartening things, because you look at the first half of his career pre-Kingsman, he made four very different movies: Layer Cake, Stardust, Kick-Ass, X-Men First Class. And for some reason, I think it's just because he loves the genre, he has not gotten out of it in the decade since Kingsman was released. Not just with the three movies he did, but now he's doing yet another spy movie, albeit with a pretty substantial budget. This is apparently made for $200 million, but I attribute that to the second part, which is this is the biggest cast he's worked with, you could argue.
Well, who is it? What's he going to be? James Cameron now and just do Kingsman movies exclusively? Because you're right, Matt. He had like a huge variety for a bit there, but I think you're right. I think he just kind of fell in love with the spy satire genre. So, I don't know. Given the box office take of this, which didn't even make half its budget back, that $200 million, that's kind of a disputed by Vaughn. He says it actually wasn't $200 million, but we just got to go by what the box office numbers tell us and Box Office Mojo and whatnot. So I'm just gonna go ahead and say it is 200, but this thing didn't even make half its money back. And I know he has plans that he wants to do, like a Kingsman and an Argyle cast and something to be named later, and do it all in like this Avengers type thing where they're all combined. Dude, you got to get out of your own way, man. Like, none of these are making money.
So the box office return, this is where I'll ask Adam, because Adam, I don't believe you weren't one of the people who paid to go see this, if I recall.
I was not. And I think the oversaturation of everybody seeing promotion for this for just months on end ad nauseum, plus the immediate critical backlash, I think everybody acted like I did. I was excited and then went, oh, this is a polished up turd. And I had no desire to see this. As soon as I started hearing about the people that had seen this movie, everybody was saying, stay the hell away.
Part of why I refute the budget denials is because I had to watch that trailer more than I've had to watch certain movies on this franchise. It seemed to play everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
This thing, a considerable portion of the money went to the marketing, just based on the influx of not just that single trailer, but there was a Super Bowl ad. There was plenty of digital marketing. So I think that 200 is a lot closer to being accurate than Vaughn wants to admit.
I agree with you. Totally.
Well, I'll say, with this movie was coming out, this is one of those movies that when it got pushed around for a lot of reasons with pandemic, with studio stuff, and I think they were hoping that this would catch fire like a few movies did. Not many did. Not everything was Maverick, but I think they were just praying and hoping that people would just tune in for something light. And that's not really Vaughn.
It's not, but also there was still a lot of unknowns about the success and the future of movies, for that matter, with the pandemic. And outside of Spider-Man No Way Home, which I think is a considerable outlier, I think that just came out at the right time. It was the right buzz, and it had a lot riding on it as far as anticipation. Outside of that, you look at some of the other big movies. Like, I'll compare this to Tenet as an example, where that came out and it did not do well. But this does not have the excuse of being released in 2021. This came out last year. This is one of the more recent movies we've reviewed in this portion of the Marvel retro. We've gone from the first movie they made to one of their most recent, quote unquote. And the only reason it's included is because of this bullshit post-credits sequence that we have to talk about. So the only reason we're doing this movie whatsoever is because of a scene that's not even included before the credits start rolling. I'm already kind of pissed off.
And that's because only one of us even knew that credit scene existed.
Well, yeah. I mean, and Matt, initially you hadn't included it. And I always take notes and I always go back and look at the interviews and things to get quotes from actors and directors and whatever when we're doing these podcasts. So when I did a search for Kingsman series, I look and I see Argyle sitting there, and I ask Matt, I said, Matt, are we doing Argyle? It's saying that it's on here. And you're like, shit, yeah, just because of that fucking post-credit scene, yeah, we have to do it. And I'm like, oh, I had no idea either. And I hate the fact that he just included that scene to kind of make this a part of that universe. I don't know why you wouldn't sell that. This whole thing just, I don't know what he's doing with this franchise. It's just bizarre to me.
Well, this movie, tying into the mid-credit scene, this feels like a movie that was made with nothing but smugness and self-satisfaction.
Yeah.
In so many ways, not just with the movie itself, but how he how he tries to tie it into his own self-contained type of universe, and putting your cart before the horse of doing a crossover when the Kingsman prequel bombed and this bombed. I know you can't predict how a movie's going to do, but there is very much sort of this putting the cart before the horse and feeling like you can do no wrong.
Smug is a great way of putting it. I felt a lot of smugness while watching this, for sure.
Well, speaking of smugness, it starts off right away because we have another 45 seconds of goddamn logos to start this movie.
Matt's favorite.
I will never get over this. This movie's already 2 hours and 20 fucking minutes, which is unacceptable.
Very unacceptable. Let's talk about that right off the bat. No comedy should be over 100 minutes. This thing is almost 2.5. No fucking excuse whatsoever. And I can point out times where places where you can cut in this movie. Oh, I hate it so much.
Yeah, when I looked at that timer when this thing started, I assumed this was like a $1.50, 55 at the absolute max. So for this thing to run 30 minutes longer than I thought was possible, yeah, you're not starting off on the right foot. And I don't know who Marv is, but I want to punch him in the nuts for these freaking Marv logos taking so long.
Well, it's Matthew Vaughn's logo, and his kids actually put together, at least initially, put together the actual logo itself. So it's kind of funny in that way, but yeah, when it's in the midst of a whole bunch of these fucking logos before the film, it does just annoys the hell out of you.
Yes, but it makes the Family Guy joke just that much more true every time we go through this shit.
And the movie doesn't really start off on the right foot because the whole opening sequence, the movie immediately plays its hand by revealing that's part of a book reading. So the context of this movie and how it tries to jump back and forth, or so it seems, starts right off the bat with one of my biggest complaints. And I don't think it's going to be the last time I criticize this movie. They are having way too much cake with trying to intercut the meta subtext of what this is trying to achieve. And the problem is, And I say this a lot, this movie thinks it's smarter than it actually is, and it commits the cardinal sin, or one of the biggest, where you know a movie is bad when not only does it not stand on its own, but it feels like a cheap imitation of 10 other movies. And that's really how you could summarize this entire movie, is just stealing shit from other movies, but doing it in such a slapdash way.
Well, here's the question. Is it more apparent because, I'm going to put my cards on the table right now, this movie's not good. I mean, there's just nothing. The reviews of this can't be more right. But I'll say this. Are we noticing it because we're not engrossed in the story like we were with that first, and to a certain extent, the second Kingsman movies? Or is it more apparent just because it's not a good movie?
Both. Not only do I think the storytelling in this is half-assed, but I also think the main character, I thought that the main character, which ties into one of my criticisms, but the person that the movie was sold on in a lot of ways, Henry Cavill, what is it with this guy and getting just ridiculous cosmetic shit on him between the controversy of the mustache of Justice League, and now he's got this ridiculous haircut that like Arnold Schwarzenegger had in one of his movies? It looks ridiculous, and the fact that it's not called upon, like no one jokes about it, should be funny, but because they're playing it straight, it's almost like they're not recognizing the inherent silliness of it.
I'll say, as much criticism as I have for this movie, I kind of dig this opening. I like the Barry White opening, you know, where we're getting the big soundtrack track that he likes to put in his films, and this whole Henry Cavill dancing with this chick before everything's revealed, and they got the guns pointed at him with this ridiculous haircut, as you say, and we get into this Brosnan from Die Another Day chase. All of this I actually kind of like. Here's the problem, though. The problem is this chase is magnificent, but it's very cartoonish because of how it's filmed and how the effects meld in. Now, if this was just something that is in this chick's head, I can go with it. But the problem is all of the effects and all of the chases look exactly like this. So how am I supposed to feel about it? Now, going back to Henry Cavill, this guy, you take, we'll talk about him in Mission Impossible pretty soon, but you take him from that franchise out of the equation, and this guy has had no luck whatsoever. We talked about him with Superman. He could have been James Bond. He just is just missing the boat barely each and every franchise he's in. And God, this guy just cannot buy a fucking break.
Well, they also couldn't buy a shootout because the smoke intercuts this sequence where we don't see him actually escape. They just cut to him leaving the room because we need to make room for a chase scene that I've seen other movies do. I mean, Police Story is kind of what I was thinking of. And also Fast Five when they're chasing the rooftop in Brazil. The problem is, Vaughn has, I've been critical of his CG work, but it's more rubbery than a nerd's rope when the car is straddling the rail. Nothing looks like it has any impact whatsoever, which I guess makes sense because this is a fictionalized spy series, we'll come to know. But it doesn't look good.
No, and like I said, you can get away with that if that's what this movie's about. You know, we're in this girl's head, and then once we get into the heart of the film, which is her amongst everything she's written, well, it still looks the same. So what am I supposed to believe? The effects never, ever differentiate themselves.
I do think this is trying to set a tone for the beginning, but not showing us what kind of movie this really is. It's questionable decision-making on Vaughn's part. Because he doesn't just want to have his cake and eat it too. He wants to be the baker. And it's just, he is so far all over the place. This is when you need somebody. You got to have a producer that tells you no. You got to have a producer that tells you yes. You got to have somebody who goes, look, I want to make your vision happen. So let's make it happen right. Because this is just somebody giving a fucking blank check. And we see what happens with those filmmakers that get it. Because I don't think anybody's in control.
Well, and Jane Goldman's not here either. She hasn't been here for the last couple of movies, and God is her presence missed. Because I'm seeing exactly what she added. She's adding exactly what you're saying, Adam. She added the filter that he needed. And without that filter, and now he's got this writer. This guy did Ice Age 3, I think is his big credit.
He wrote Wonder Woman, the first one.
He helped with it. There were about six screenwriters on that. But he's got nobody to tell him no with his ideas.
It's funny that you call this a blank check movie because that check bounced based on the box office. And yeah, this is one of those times where even the greatest of filmmakers, your Scorseses and your Spielbergs, have close collaborators that can keep them in check. You know, that's why Thelma Shoemaker has been so good for Scorsese as an editor. And Spielberg's best movies, you know, he had like Lawrence Kasdan writing Raiders. Spielberg was able to hold George Lucas in check for most of their collaborations. And this is just Vaughn unleashed in the way that Man of Steel's, speaking of Henry Cavill, the third act is just Snyder unchained.
For something that we'll discuss in the future, but to me, it shows, and the perfect example is Deadpool and Deadpool 2. You have the first one where you have people that are passionate about a project. They're given a limited type budget. They're going to make it work because they're passionate about it. Then you decide to make a sequel, and because their heads go so far up their ass, they're like, I'm going to do whatever I want. And then they turn out shit. And I think that's kind of what happened after Kingsman, the Secret Service, really got so much goodwill. I think everybody's just hoping that he could catch fire, and he's off the rails. He's unchained. And it hurts the entire franchise by what he keeps spitting out.
We're also seeing this feels like the casting director of this was picking names out of a hat. Because we got Dua Lipa, John Cena, and Henry Cavill in an espionage spy film. Which, I don't understand how this computes whatsoever. And to get John Cena for what, 2 minutes?
He had to have not even been there 2 days.
He might not have been there for 2 hours.
Yeah.
they must have been filming Peacemaker somewhere nearby, and he just walked across the street.
Well, he looks like he got off the set of the Suicide Squad because he's wearing Hawaiian shirt.
And it's amazing to think this is Cavill's third foray into this, if you include Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah, Man from U.N.C.L.E., Mission Impossible, and this. They get Dua Lipa to do like a retinal scan, and it goes back to Richard E. Grant, who, between this and Rise of Skywalker, why do you cast this guy and give him nothing to do?
Somebody must like him. Somebody must like him or think
he's such a great actor.
He brought prestige, but that was decades ago.
They cut to, you can also tell Matthew Vaughn's kind of an idiot because he has Richard E. Grant, who is as British can be, as a U.S. diplomat / Secret Service, because the Washington Monument's in the background. And they talk about the Directorate, which is the only reason this is not called the Organization is because Hitman has that copyrighted.
Something we may talk about as well.
Or the Division, whatever it's called. It's
the Division.
Yep. I mean, look, the name is as haphazard as their actual plot in this movie, because I still don't understand their end goals, as we'll come to find out.
Neither does the AI writer who did most of this.
It feels like it was written by the Entity from Mission Impossible. we find out that she is reading the book is a... So she's reading the end of the book.
I was just about ready to say that.
Don't do that at a book launch. That's stupid.
I have been at a lot of these signings and a lot of these readings, and you do not read the end of your upcoming book. You just don't do it. God, this fucking infuriated me.
May sound like the nitpickiest of nitpicks, but my God, is that stupid.
Yeah.
Ellie Conway, who is basically J.K. Rowling level of notoriety. The books have sold like 250 million worldwide if you read the back flap. Everyone loves them, and my God, is Bryce Dallas Howard miscast.
All right, let's talk about Bryce Dallas Howard. Well, first of all, before we talk about her, let's talk about this character. Now, there were a lot of rumors going around, and I remember this, because when I went back to look at the interviews and things coming out around this time, the fact that there were rumors that Taylor Swift ghostwrote this under a different name.
Under that pseudonym. Wow.
Yeah, which it was proven false. It was proven to be two other people who wrote it. But they did say that the only thing they based on Taylor Swift was the fact that this chick has a backpack with a cat in it. So, I don't know. I found that really funny when I looked back at it. All right, Bryce Dallas Howard. I was racking my brain, and Matt, you and I have covered a lot of her films. Go back to our, you can't go back to our Shyamalan film retrospective, but we reviewed her when we did Shyamalan. We're going to review her when we get to Jurassic Park, the Jurassic World series. And I have something to say about Bryce Dallas Howard. I think in a lot of ways, she's very talented. I think she's a great director. The problem with her is when they give her these, woe is me until I need to roar type role. She cannot excel. Where she excels, and I was thinking about this, Jen was watching The Help about...
Oh, she's such a bitch in that.
About 2-3 months ago, she was watching The Help, and I sat and I watched it, and I forgot just how good she was in it, because, Matt, you're absolutely right. She plays bitch very, very well. Unfortunately, she's in this as this dowdy, I'm by myself, and I have a date tonight, but it's with my cat. This is not her, and she is so miscast. I felt bad watching this because I knew I was going to have to come on here, and I might do it with Jurassic World. I remember not being a fan of her in those either, but I just don't like her in this, and it's not her fault. It's the writing and the casting.
All right, well, here comes Adam with his trademark defense of redheads.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. I think she's adorable. Yeah.
That wasn't the question.
I don't necessarily like what they have her do. I buy what she is supposed to be. I'm not saying I like it, but I get it. And I think she's a friendly presence. I don't know who else you put in here that I would care about that doesn't look like a freaking superhero the second you put her behind a table. So I get her at it, and I think she's a welcome presence. The back and forth, the, oh no, what am I going to do? That shit gets old, but I like her more than most of the people they put on screen.
So I think the problem is she's not believable, and I will never body shame anybody, but her physicality does not add to the believability for the third act of this movie. And the problem is, they did this 30 years ago with The Long Kiss Goodnight. It's kind of that scene.
I thought of that too. Yeah.
You know, because Gina Davis is not ripped. She's not Linda Hamilton in Terminator 2, but you totally buy her in the action sequences. And when it comes to here, part of it is also the way Vaughn shoots his action. God, there's a scene later on that I think is inexcusable. But I think she's given one note to play for 2/3 of this movie, and then when they have to make the switch, not only is the writing unconvincing, but her performance doesn't bring it either. But that answers the question. I don't know who you cast in this part. I would have to think about that, but I'm sure there could have been someone who could have balanced this a little bit better.
Shit, even like a Zoe Kravitz or somebody like that. Somebody who I would believe. Bryce Dallas Howard, God bless her, but you're right. I just don't think she's cut out for this kind of role.
I'll say, and yes, I'll admit my bias, I love, especially in a movie that's got John Cena and Henry Cavill very sparingly, that she looks like a normal woman in here. Because this shit just doesn't happen in Hollywood, and I fucking love it. And I love when she actually does movies and she's not doing the shit that she's done a few times where she starves herself to look slimmer. So I'm so fucking glad that she looks like normal Bryce Howard.
So she, like I said, she is basically J.K. Rowling level of popular with these books. She's written her fourth one, and She's kind of got a bit of writer's block, so she calls her mom. Hi, Catherine O'Hara. We're seeing you a lot on these retrospectives.
I was just about ready to say, how many times have we reviewed her this past year?
She's popping up on my TV randomly lately.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we just say fuck it and do the Home Alone retrospective.
Right? Fuck it. Well, I think that's what Matthew Vaughn said was fuck it when he was making this. Yeah, Catherine O'Hara. And the second she's on screen, I know exactly where her character's going. I hadn't seen this. I hadn't heard anything about it. But you know right away when she's asking for all these details. Like, come on, man.
Oh, this movie, there is no subtlety. I mean, this movie is riddled with cliches.
Yeah.
To the point where you could fill an entire James Bond gadget room of the cliches they just take from other spy movies. She tells her mom, you know, I'm having writer's block. I don't know what to do. And the mom's asking, what's going to happen next? They do some more intercutting with Cavill where he talks about from the informant about this hacker that they got to meet. So Ellie gets on a train and is asked by one of the guys at the book signing, which right away I'm like, all right, this guy's a bad guy. Really? And then this, who I thought was Matthew McConaughey at first, and then it turns out to be Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, I did not recognize him at all. I didn't even know he was in this. And when he sat down, I was trying to rack my brain. I'm like, where have I, like, I don't recognize this guy at all.
Not you, who you would expect, certainly, to be a spy, because he is very, he's a real everyman type of actor, although he's got a tremendous amount of range, as we've come to know. And I think he's the most vital person in the movie, but they also don't write him to be that funny.
Yeah, he's doing things with these lines that I don't think the lines were meant for. And I think he's doing very well with them. I think the problem, though, is him and Howard just have no chemistry whatsoever.
Oh, God.
They try. And we're going to see that this guy is going to fall in love with this girl the longer he's with her. I'm knowing that because I'm being told, but I'm not feeling it.
Well, it's the thing of, it's the convention. We have to have a romance because these kinds of movies demand it. And God forbid we have a spy movie where there's an asexual partnership.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. So why not, since Cavill's her character, why not have him and Cena kiss later on?
Well, because there would be gay panic. There would be news articles. It would be,
see,
they're scared to do it.
This movie might lose money then. It's amazing how, I'll say great, how great of an actor Sam Rockwell is, and his movie choices are all over the map. I can't wait till we get into some of the Marvel stuff, because I think he's one of the best things that Marvel ever did, and I'm still pissed that we don't have him back 20 years later. And then you look at something like Moon, and it's just like, this guy is an immeasurable talent, but the movies that he's in, it's like they're picked with an Ouija board. You just can't, you have no idea what he's doing, but I appreciate him for it.
I think his big movies haven't been great. He's been good about, you know, he won an Oscar. He's been in a lot of good smaller movies. It's because people don't know what to do with him.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You're not going to see a movie because he's in it. He's not going to be Tom Cruise, but fuck, he's good when he wants to be.
So we get a fight sequence on the train where we're really starting to see Vaughn just use the same bag of tricks with the janky camera work.
Yep.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm just starting, and now that you don't have the shock value of the blood, which even with the Kingsman was getting kind of monotonous, you're starting to, I'm not going to call Vaughn a hack, but you know, this is like going to your local fair and seeing like a Creedence Clearwater Revival group where it's like, yeah, you sound like them, but there's no soul.
This scene on the train, too, was sold a lot in the trailers that we saw 100 times leading up to this. And I'm not going to say it's bad action. It's not bad, but it's tampered down Vaughn. It's not as good as I know Vaughn can be.
It's serviceable, but yeah, it is the same bag of tricks. You know, people don't fall to the floor to the left. He's just twisting the camera. Mm-hmm. So the moves that he's doing are the same. He's not growing. He's not evolving. It's the same shame because there's still movies that I would love to see him do in certain genres, but this, it's the same thing.
It's also that dumb trope of nobody waits to go for the kill until he finishes reading the book. So they get off the train, they go to her house, they do some digging around. So they're trying to track. So from what I understand, because this plot is stupid, to be quite frank, they're looking for the knock list from Mission Impossible 1. but they just call it the master key, where it's like a list of everyone who's like an operative. So it's bad enough you're already doing stuff that, look, you ask people what the first Mission Impossible movie is about, unless you've seen that movie very recently, they will never mention knock list.
Well, we're about to, but you're a couple months ahead of time. Yeah, the breakfast room at a honeymoon suite is not as vacant as this fucking plot. This plot is all over the fucking place. And I'm taking notes, and I'm following it, but it's tough to follow, guys. This plot is a fucking mess.
Oh, I'm going to say, we discussed 21 Bond movies where the plot was a fucking mess.
You're not wrong.
So I do think he's spoofing the spoofs almost. It's not comedic enough, but it's not serious enough. And I think that's where the issue is. But it feels in line with so much other stuff. It feels in line with two-thirds of the Bond movies. It feels in line with 75% of Mission Impossible, of Jason Bourne. But I'm glad, Matt, I'm glad you took the note, because I didn't know what they were looking for by the end of this film still. Same. And I was not going to rewind it to find out.
Yeah, same. Yeah, this movie has a really bad case of narrativitis. I'm so glad, Matt, that you were taking the notes on this.
That it's fucking disorienting every time they intercut from Sam Rockwell and Henry Cavill doing the action scene.
Oh my god, yeah. Although, I will say, I think that's kind of well done. I get what he's getting after with that, but you're right. It's very disorienting.
We're also introduced to the main villain, played by Walter White himself, Bryan Cranston, who, I swear to God, has two different agents, one for television, one for movies. Because this guy had two iconic roles on television with Malcolm in the Middle and Breaking Bad, both opposite ends of the spectrum as far as range. A lot of his movies haven't been very good, and this is sort of the opposite of his Total Recall performance, because he played the villain in that. And in Total Recall, he's too over the top for how toned down that movie is. Relatively speaking, this one, he's too downbeat for something as ridiculous as this movie is.
He needed a gimmick. He needed a scar. He needed a deformity. He needed something to be that crazy. An
accent, like a ridiculous accent.
We don't have that over-the-topness from one of the villains in this, and we always get that. And this is missing it. We don't have the Valentine. Well, we have Valentine, but we don't have the Valentine. You know what I mean? You know, something with a bionic eye or a bionic arm. Something for fun.
When it comes to his movie versus TV work, I think with Bryan Cranston, it's better to be a good house in a bad neighborhood than an amazing house in an extraordinary neighborhood. He's got that it thing where you look at him, you know exactly where he's coming from. But in film, it doesn't translate that well. And this is coming from somebody who's not even, I've gotten a lot of shit for this, but I'm not even a fan of Breaking Bad. But I can get where his character's coming from on that show. Here, again, like Catherine O'Hara, you know exactly where he's coming from the second he's on screen. And I don't feel anything.
I think the definition of fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's made good movies, but that's just because he picked good scripts like Argo or Drive. It was the best thing in Godzilla, and it's not even close. He's really a thankless role. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they got him just because he's a name.
And he probably wouldn't work with Vaughn.
Yeah,
a lot of people do. That's what everyone has nice things to say about his shoots.
They have nice things to say about his shoots. But the problem is people were wanting to work with Vaughn because he was making good films. Now, I mean, if I were an actor, I think the only reason I want to be around him is because he's married to one of my 90s crushes, which is Claudia Schiffer. I don't want to see if she was hanging around set. There's nothing really about his last few movies that I would be like, oh, I want to work with that guy.
Races on to find this computer hacker with the master list. So Aiden is a former division agent. I guess they both are, as we'll find out. So my question is, how does he still have access to all this tech?
Yeah.
Because he's got a jet, he's got no resources, and they've cut him off. They're out to get him, but yet he's got the John Hammond, I'll spare no expense thing. They eventually go to, all right, so this, they're in the middle of a public park, which is also stupid because you should be laying low. They go to the hacker's apartment. And just by sheer coincidence of dancing, they find the freaking thing in the floorboards.
Dancing.
Nothing organically good happens. It's just dumb luck. And she happens to notice the fault in the wallpaper.
Guys, this movie is akin to Chinese water torture. I mean, it's so torturous to watch these plots unfold. And seeing these two being, he's trying to train her, I guess. And of course, the big reveal is that she's actually Argyle, although it's Argyle. So it's like, god damn it. This movie's earning every bit of its bad reputation at this point.
Well, it also doesn't earn the 2 hours and 20 minutes we're forced to sit through it.
If we cared about the characters, I think we'd be more forgiving. I said it, and I'm going to say it a few more times. This isn't stupider than Live and Let Die or Man with a Golden Gun, but we cared by that point. We don't care about these people. So to find them literally step into the next part of the plot is stupid.
Not only do they literally step in, but their original plan did not require this logbook whatsoever. Independent of this, they would be just fine. And I call bullshit on him jumping up from the floorboards, getting that much height. And Cavill is just here now to be a stand-in for both Sam Rockwell and for her, as we'll find out. So you're kind of, in a lot of ways, wasting him.
Oh, God. He's a total waste.
Cavill's a waste in almost anything he does.
And that was my point earlier, is the guy can't buy a fucking break.
yeah, you know what? After it misses, it starts to be your fault.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm like, when you have that track record, eventually it's kind of on you to pick better projects. I'm so tired of the regular person having to team up with the super spy.
Yes.
Because it's been done. I mean, look, this movie is basically, I mentioned it's kind of got the Long Kiss Goodnight elements. It's got elements of the Bourne Identity with this organization, but you could say that about a lot of other stuff. Because it's got Amnesiac. It's got the worst elements of the lesser Bond movies where the plot is just nonsensical and feels like nothing but fetch quests. And they're trying to do this like Romancing the Stone because of the writer component. They jump off the top of the building with the shot in the trailer of him throwing the cat.
Okay. Shot directly from the trailer. Adam, you're laughing your ass off. Now, you guys know that me and Jen had a Scottish Fulch cat for a set of months. And this cat did not get along with our other two cats at all. We ended up having to give it back, much to our chagrin. But this was a selling point for this film, was this fucking cat in this goddamn backpack. And when they're jumping on this trampoline and the cat's jumping, I'm like, Adam, you're laughing at this? You like this?
This made me laugh because, one, I know they're finally going to do something with the cat because that cat's just been there. I have a wife and daughter who really want a backpack for our new cats. So the expression on the cat's face makes me laugh because that cat brings more emotion than Sam Rockwell does through half of the film. But the way they animate that cat, it made me laugh. When it's up in the air and it zooms in, yeah, even though I had seen it, I think 84 times in a movie theater that I had seen this trailer and these clips, it made me laugh when they did this. I saw it coming. You know what's going to happen. It made me chuckle.
And we also, one of the things I hate in movies are miscommunicating, where she catches him saying she needs a bullet in her head. A, that's the wrong turn of phrase you would use.
Yeah.
But B, we have to contrive a way for her to create artificial tension to think that he's also trying to kill her.
This enraged me. It's like, this is the way this guy talks, is she needs a bullet in her head? Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is completely contrived.
This made no sense.
Yeah.
So Ellie talks to her mom and says, meet me in London at this hotel. And she goes, book us flights to London, England, which genuinely made me laugh because I'm like, okay, is there another London?
That's funny when it's Paris, France instead of Paris, Texas. But that's the only time that joke works.
And this is one of those movies where we don't see the dad until he walks in the door. So I'm like, all right, I know where this is going because Bryan Cranston walks in.
The different random people that he brings back for one or two shots from his previous films, like the neighbor with the phone was from Golden Circle. There's just people that he populates randomly just because. And it ends up being distracting at a certain point because I'm playing mental IMDb of where I've seen this person. And when they don't matter to the film, it's just a fucking distraction.
Complete.
And that neighbor with the phone is one of them.
And we're going to get a big one later, too, with a certain actor that shows back up. And I'm just like, what are you doing? I understand you like working with people. I get it. But
we're world building.
We get the big reveal that the parents are sleeper agents for the division. Sam Rockwell comes in and shoots Bryan Cranston, but I know he's not dead because I can't believe this movie has a running gag where people get shot in the chest. And based on human anatomy, they survive because it's scientifically possible. But the odds of it are so astronomically high for one person, let alone two different fucking people.
And that is explained earlier in the film. You might as well have just written it down that you know that's going to come back. The only surprise is that it comes back twice.
So they decide, all right, we're going to go on the run. Let's go to France because Matthew Vaughn is friends with Sam Jackson and wants to keep him in his movies. So we have to listen to him talk about Pinot Noir for 10 minutes. Yeah. Like, it becomes a Tarantino movie where people just talk about random shit for 10 minutes.
Not only does he give him one of the most torturous exposition scenes I've ever seen. And people know, I mean, look, a month ago we talked about the first Kingsman, and I get it. I enjoyed Sam Jackson. I just don't like how Matthew Vaughn uses him. I said I didn't like his Valentine character. Now this, is this supposed to be a relative of Valentine? Or is he just supposed to be, oh, he's just a random person that I'm putting in the movie because I like working with Sam Jackson? I don't know what this world is telling me.
That this feels incomplete. Now, I'm going to say, I like this inclusion. The reason is, I felt what they were doing here was setting up this winery to be the bridge between Statesman and Kingsman.
Oh, that's a good call.
That's just what it felt like. It wasn't whiskey, it was wine. And to me, that made sense. But guess what? It doesn't make that reveal and that kind of, I guess you could say it kind of does, but it doesn't. I don't mind this. What I do mind is that once we get this explanation, we meet Sammy Jackson, we look, you come to my house and you want to talk wine, different varieties, I will have that conversation with you. What I don't want is your movie has become so convoluted and overwrought that you have to have Sam Rockwell sit down for 10 minutes and explain where we are halfway through this movie.
Well, not only that, once he uses Sam Jackson for this scene, the rest of the movie, we're watching him watch Laker games. What the fuck is going on here?
Probably what he did on set.
Yeah, I thought of that too. I literally thought of that. I have in my notes that he might have just been doing this on set right off camera and Vaughn just shot it.
Well, I'd rather be watching the Lakers than this movie. This is also the sign of a bad movie, where you have to stop the movie to explain not only the backstory, but why we're actually here in the first place.
They have to catch you up with everything. Here, this is what happened. This is what's going to... Did you miss it? Because now we're going to... I mean, this is a paint-by-number coloring book that they have to draw out here.
So we find out that Ellie is actually Agent Rachel Kyle. So Argyle comes from R. Kylie, which sounds too much like R. Kelly. I would have changed that.
You have a spy with the last name Kyle. I'm thinking of Catwoman.
Oh, fuck.
I don't know if I'd rather be watching that, but it's pretty close. It's entertaining. So she was a former spy who was captured by the division and brainwashed to believe that they were her parents. And because she suppressed them, she did it in the form of novels, which basically have predicted the future, because that's how memories work. The suppression is one thing, but that's something that traumatic, you would distort reality. So the fact that everything has come to fruition is a convenience I just don't buy.
If I was in the theater at this point, I would have walked out. This, seriously, it's gone from bad to worse at this point, and I don't know the universe that Vaughn is creating here. I don't know if any of it makes any sense.
It makes sense to him and him alone. This is just utter self-masturbation.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I feel like this is like right exactly the halfway point.
Yeah,
like this,
day four of watching this movie.
Like to the minute, this is almost halfway through this film, which I got 2 points. If you're going to do this, this needs to be the end of your first act, which should be 30 minutes into your 90-minute film. Do this in the first third of your film. And I think maybe we're having a different response, because I feel like the first hour of this is pretty damn interminable. Garrett, you're ready to walk out of a movie theater? This is where I start having fun. I was just so freaking bored. Here, I'm like, okay, you're going to start having some fun with this. And I'm like, you know, I don't know what it was. I don't know what it is. Maybe she looks good in the pictures so that Mac can slap me over the head. But I finally start going, okay, it took you an hour to decide what this movie is, but at least I start having fun with it.
Well, it's the why now problem, because he should have told her this as soon as they got off the train. Because not only would it jog her memories, you're on the clock.
Yeah, to do this now makes no sense. To wait this long to put it in your movie is a slap in the face to your audience. But on the bright side, the audience did not pay to go see this movie, so way to go, Vaughn. But yeah, I mean, you do this 25, 27, 30 minutes in, and you have a different flow.
Well, they even do the long kiss goodnight thing where he takes a swing at her and her reflexes, like, reactivate.
Yeah, and Sam Jackson was in that. Sam Jackson was in that movie.
Yeah. Stop stealing from better movies.
I don't know if that's a better movie. Maybe we'll talk about that movie someday. But
yes, it is.
No, it's not. It's not. Another
in it for us to discuss.
When this happens and like something awakens in her, quote unquote, I'm like, oh, fuck's sake.
The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
And we also find out that Bryan Cranston, he put himself in the field because he was looking. I'm just calling the characters by their actor names because I don't care.
Exactly.
I don't know their names.
He was taking pictures of her book, but he's flipping through the pages so quickly that there's no way, unless those things are like snapping pictures in nanoseconds.
Yeah, unless you're Johnny Five, you're not going to be taking the pictures as quick if you're flipping this fucking book. I'm sorry.
And he said, we had to let your memories come back in their own time because you could lose everything. But then you choose to do it by literally telling her everything. That's not natural. And then for the sake of pacing, they basically say, still got to get a hold of the master file. But I'm fighting to stay awake watching this movie.
Matt, same.
File, but this is Matthew Vaughn doing just filmmaking masturbation.
But Adam, you seem to be having a better time than me and Matt are. Are you having fun here?
This point, yeah. No. Once we get to the vineyard, once we start actually doing what this movie is instead of playing games with it, I start having fun.
Okay.
Well, it's also the thing of it took them five years to do this shit.
Yep.
Yeah, at this point, if it wasn't for this podcast, I would have turned this movie off, honestly. I was having such a bad time with this. And I was just waiting, hoping. And again, at this point, I'm watching a rated R film. So I'm thinking, okay, Vaughn's going to surprise me with something. I know he is. There's going to be some huge violent scene that is going to grab my attention again. And given that it's a PG-13 film, nope. He doesn't. And by the way, here's the other thing about this movie, too, that really enraged me. This was picked up by Apple for $200 million, okay? There is shameless Apple fucking shilling in the course of this film. There's so much goddamn Apple product placement. I felt like I was watching a Ridley Scott commercial from the 80s. This movie is just rout with it, and that's another thing. It's like everything has to be done by Microsoft, and I'm just like, oh my god. I get it. You paid $200 million for it, but I hope you lost all of it, because this is akin to nothing.
So they also do the thing of, they set up this thing where she gets emailed a twist for the book. Obviously know where this is going, because they show the person who quote-unquote died. And I'm like, all right, so clearly this is the person they think is dead, because this movie has no morsel of originality left in it. It's one thing to write a spy movie. It's another thing to actually be a spy if you've been out of the game for 5 years. And we get Adam's favorite thing that he hates, when we have to use text to show where we are in the world. The freaking Arabian Peninsula, because they ran out of places that have not been. That's good, narrow it down. That's a pretty broad category.
Very.
It's a big area. It's like just pointing a country. Come on. So continent.
They go to see another Matthew Vaughn alumni, Sophia Batella.
Yeah. This is the chick from the first one, right?
Yeah, she was the one with the legs.
This is the mummy. This is... She was fun in that first one, and she has been interminable ever since. Every goddamn movie she's been in.
So they go to her because she's the keeper of secrets. But Catherine O'Hara shows up, and we find out she's a neurologist, like she's a witch doctor, basically, or a psychiatrist, which is how she was able to manipulate Bryce Dallas Howard. She does get the master file, and they all start drinking, and they all, of course, the drinks are spiked, so they get knocked out. Then they go to freaking... All right, this is where it gets ridiculously dumb.
Oh, now it's starting to get dumb.
Because now we're just throwing twists on top of twists, where we find out she was a double agent.
Oh, yes.
Beast.
She was the division's best asset, which is why they needed her to retrieve the code. She shoots Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, okay. So this is when she, quote-unquote, turns evil, right?
Yeah, which is about as convincing as my cat trying to play dead.
Yeah, this is so bad. And again, this is not a knock against Bryce Dallas Howard, but she is not good at playing this type of role. She really isn't, and I'm not buying it for a second.
This needed to be the Miranda Frost reveal in Die Another Day.
I believe it about as much. I don't. She needs to not be a blonde. It didn't work in Spider-Man. Doesn't work here.
Mm. Yeah, Spider-Man. Why do we cast redheads as blondes and then a blonde as a redhead?
It's red. You did this 3 times in one film. Now, it did make me think, because both my kids, when they saw the trailers, were like, ooh, this looks fun. And I think it's obvious that he made this
PG-13. That's why you're sending your kids to college.
That's true. I do think that he tried to make this for a broader appeal than he did the Kingsman films. And I think part of this is written on that level, that my kids at 12, 13 might be surprised. I'm not justifying it, but I'm thinking that it's literally, I don't think he's thinking he's clever.
Well, it's not done for us. At this point, I don't know who he's writing it for. So that's about as good an explanation as I can come up with.
And I really question if he wrote this, because I feel like he put all his films into AI and said, give me something.
Well, he didn't write it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they also do the thing where it turns out that the scene we've seen earlier in the movie, the cold open, actually happened. So Sam Rockwell grabbed her off the bike like John Cena did. And I've seen Sam Rockwell. I've seen John Cena. These things don't compute as far as physicality.
You are no John Cena.
No, Rockwell, you can do a lot of things, but you are no John Cena, sir.
John Cena makes Henry Cavill look small from a musculature level.
He makes every normal guy look small.
But Cavill is also not a normal guy.
At this point, he's not. At this point, I think he is. I don't think he's picked up a weight since Justice League.
If you watch The Witcher.
No, that's Jen's show. I never watched it.
Yep, that's a coin. So I'll say to Ellie's, to go to her defense, she couldn't see him.
God, fucking So she reveals that she's doing, like, Vince Russo wrote this part, because now we're having swerves on top of swerves, because she sent the master file to him anyway, which has been in the division's computer this whole time.
Emilio Estevez in the elevator.
Oh.
And she goes, because I remember everything. So now the movie has said, fuck it. There is no more amnesia. She has fully stamped out of it. And now she is a full-fledged James Bond, Jason Bourne hybrid. I thought the twist was going to be she's part Terminator.
And he did the amnesia shit in Golden Circle. We went through this. It's playing the same beats and playing on lesser.
And then we have this, like, built-up dramatic scene of... We have an almost cute scene of Rockwell teaching her how to stomp someone's head. And so she's just about to do it to him. But all of a sudden, it's time to wake up out of that and be the super spy that you are. I'm like, oh, vomit.
Now, Garrett, I know you hate meta subtext, but there's one reference here that made me... tip my cap. It's when she takes off her heels.
Yeah, I laughed too.
That
was a good callback.
That's what talk about with Jurassic World. Yep. That's the talk of the internet.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, you know what? That's actually pretty funny.
And the fact that she would go with that makes me laugh as well.
But also, like, that makes sense. Like, you never see, A, you don't see a lot of female spies. B, I don't remember any Bond girls running around in heels.
Mm-hmm.
You know it was deliberate.
Definitely. Oh, Vaughn's no dummy. He knows what he's doing here. You know, the problem is he's doing too much of it. And when you're in a narrative that you just don't care about, it goes from being cute to being annoying. This somehow was able to walk that line, and I was like, okay, that made me laugh.
Aiden's revealed to have survived because she shot him through the vascular corridor. I mean, just because it's possible doesn't mean it's probable, especially when two people survive this.
Yeah.
Because it's basically, if you shoot someone at the right angle, it looks like you shoot him in the heart, but the bullet literally goes through a trajectory where it misses the vital areas. A, you have to be a marksman on the level of bullseye to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just have to be remarkably lucky and stop the bleeding. Which, if you know anything about exit wounds, you have to stop the bleeding there, but she does it earlier on in the entry wound. This dumbass who knows everything doesn't realize that you have to stop the bleeding on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
They also reveal that Kira survived.
Yeah, how'd this happen?
Same reason. And he even says, like, you did this because you haven't fired a gun in 5 years, but you still made that work. He references Jeffrey Dahmer, which doesn't even work because Dahmer didn't use firearms.
Yeah.
And now the movie, Vaughn goes back to a bag of tricks with another dance number that's bright and colorful to another song.
Right before this, there's a line. You want to talk about the meta, had to write it down, it got me so good. But they're doing another exposition dump while they're doing this to catch us up. And he says, oh my God, that's just the dumbest thing. And I think that is just Sam Rockwell reading the script and going, I got to give my opinion here. Ugh, to actually have that line in this film made me laugh out loud. On my couch alone.
So they're shooting everybody in this rainbow smoke-infused fight sequence. But it just reminds me so much of the final act in Kingsman.
This is when the PG-13 rating really comes to play, though, because there's nothing really going on. The action, I think, is not bad. I'm not going to say it's bad, but it's just toned down. And again, like, I'm watching this thinking it's an R-rated movie, but no, this is all PG-13 action, and it's fine. But when you're watching a film like this, especially when you spend $200 million on it, I'm not feeling a thing. And given the fact that I haven't given a shit about these characters the entire time, I'm just waiting for it to be over.
Well, the movie.
Little did I know what I had coming right up.
No, because the next scene is where I almost broke with this oil sequence.
Hated this scene so much. Mm-hmm. This is torture, dude. I could not believe this scene. In all these movies that we've watched, Howard the Duck, Man Thing, all of them, this is the worst scene out of everything we've seen so far in this Marvel retrospective. I fucking revolted at this to the point where in my notes I just said, fuck this movie right at this point.
I got two notes. I wish I could, maybe I'll send a picture in the group back to back. The first one is, yes, Garrett, I'm enjoying this dance colorful scene. And it says, yes, Garrett. The next one is, yes, Matt, I love this oil ice skating.
Oh, Adam, you can't.
It is so stupid. As soon as she pulls out the knives, I'm just like, do it. Come on, do it. Do it. I'm just like, it's, I don't know. I've given myself to the second half of this movie. Maybe it broke me in that first half, but I'm just like, fuck it. This is so stupid.
Just the physicality of it. Just the fact that those knives would be touching the bottom. And then after she's done, she has no fucking oil on her whatsoever. This is beyond that's stupid.
There's no blood.
Blemish on her cheek.
It is so beyond dumb.
Yep.
especially because he takes that huge slide.
Yes.
And is this makes Pierce Brosnan paragliding in Die Another Day look like legitimate espionage. And the level of because this movie is exaggerated, but it's not super exaggerated like the Kingsman films are. So this feels like a step too far for the context of this movie. Especially the fact that these knives are, because they're going at such a high rate, you would start a fire just based on the friction.
Exactly.
And then just shooting bullets.
That's how I thought it was going to end. I thought it was going to end with like a cutting edge toe pick kind of thing and setting off a fire.
Oh, because that would have actually been fun to watch.
Like you set that up and you didn't deliver.
We also do the dumb thing of they're in the freaking database mainframe that looks like inside the Magic Kingdom if you watch those documentaries about inside Disney. So Schrodinger's cat finally comes to play by gouging out his eyes.
That's the only reason
this cat is here.
Yeah, we got to get this cat involved, and we got to get the cat to take out the main bad guy. So let's just have the cat gouge out his fucking eyes. Are you kidding me?
Which they did the same beat in Captain Marvel like a couple years before this.
I haven't seen Captain Marvel yet.
Captain Marvel with Sam Jackson.
Really?
It's the flirting.
I haven't watched it yet. I'm waiting for our retrospective to get to it.
It's one of the worst moments in the MCU, and that's kind of a pretty big bar to cross, especially recently. So he gets his eyes gouged out. They go to the top of the exterior. So I guess the division's sponsored by BP because it's an oil cargo ship.
This feels like the most random Spectre type of
vehicle. Yeah, I thought of Spectre.
Yeah, well, I also thought of the freaking... She's got Winter Soldier programming because they like use a trigger word to make her fight Sam Rockwell.
Mm-hmm.
You have her as a Manchurian candidate. Why wouldn't you have just activated her and get the info you need?
Yeah, why didn't you activate her the moment she broke protocol?
Yeah.
This is what happens when you have one guy steering the ship and nobody questioning his decision making.
Well, again, he's not the one who wrote the script, though. He's the one making the final decision.
He was so in love with the visuals
that
he didn't care about the directing, because this is where Kira Ex Machina shows back up and kills Catherine O'Hara.
I can't believe she came back. They only showed her three times beforehand and referenced that bullet wound.
And we have set a record from the biggest fall from grace after winning an Oscar between this and Kraven the Hunter.
Oh, God.
Like she has Ariane DeBose. She won for West Side Story.
Oh, that's right. She did.
And she's basically done nothing but shit ever since, because it's the Ben Kingsley rule in Gandhi. Where it's like, yep, I won, but you got to make some crap now at penance, which explains this movie, certainly. So they get the master key transition. They detonate the oil tank. And the day is saved as she goes back to her civilian life as her writer with her fifth book.
Reading the ending.
Again.
Yep.
And the real Argyle walks in, quote unquote. Or someone that's an amazing Henry Cavill doppelganger.
Cavill just, this poor dude and Aaron May. Yeah. I'm glad he has fun. I'm glad he's willing to take the piss, as they say, for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, with that mullet? Oh, God.
Yes.
The movie's not done yet, because just when I thought I had no anger left in my body, I was like Jason where I got up for one last scare. And this also doesn't make any sense, because this is supposed to be her fictitious world.
Yeah.
You know, Argyle is her, but we reveal that Argyle was a Kingsman agent, and the first novel was based on his life, which makes no goddamn sense!
None. Absolutely.
But also, the Kingsman, okay, that was a name, but it was Kingsman. In the King's Band, they went to Kingsman. Like, the tailor shop was established. There's no reason to have a bar called the King's Man other than to make us do this fucking movie.
Good job, Vaughn. You accomplished your mission.
We have had two abysmal post-credit sequences in a row.
Yep.
We've had Hitler, and we've had this.
Yeah, I don't know which one's worse, boys. I don't know.
This makes no sense. I can't make sense of this.
Is he following it up with a Kingsman movie starring this guy? Or what was his plan with this?
I think the plan was to do this guy and Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Okay.
This is supposed to be Rockwell, because he's wearing the same shirt that Rockwell wears when he gets shot by Ellie.
Well, and then the exclamation point on it is we get a door slamming or something, and it's the poster for the actual movie. So I'm just like, I'm beyond confused at this point. And honestly, I don't give a shit.
I'm confused. I'm exhausted. Uh-huh. I feel like I'm watching this for days, and I'm pissed off. Yeah. So it's a great recipe to leave a movie on. I baked my own cake and sat it in the oven and just let it marinate in hatred until it started to bubble like the slime from Ghostbusters 2. So, Garrett, on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give this piece of shit?
Oh, Matt, sometimes you kill me. Oh, man. So, coming into this, I knew of its reputation. I knew of the bad reviews. And my question was, could it be an improvement over last week's film? Which, if you go back to last week's review, that would be like pole vaulting over mouse turds. It's not that hard to be better than last week's film. Guess what? This movie failed. And to have this retrospective bookended by Howard the Duck and this has been a really bad sandwich, boys. Sam Rockwell, look, he's not very likable here, but he can fall in shit and come out smelling like roses, so I'm not too worried about him. Bryce Dallas Howard, you poor woman. I wish I could just recast this and just take her out of this film because she does not belong here. I hope she had a good time on the set, but I just was so bored by this movie. This is one of the worst movies I have seen since we started this site. The action is tampered down. The narrative, don't even try following. Matt, congratulations on trying to do a plot summary of this that makes any bit of sense, because it's obvious that Matthew Vaughn didn't before he said action. This movie's just a mess. Is it worse than last week's movie, though? That's what I'm thinking. Is it worse than the four? Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say, yeah, this is a 3 on 10. It's got some likable moments, but once that ice skating scene happens and everything else after things are revealed, this movie just does not recover. And God, I hope Matthew Vaughn can recover from this. And what this movie did is it really made me thankful that he did not do Days of Future Past, because if it turned out anything like this, spoiler alert for people who haven't listen to our previous review of that, but I really like that film. The fact that Matthew Vaughn didn't do it, I'm more and more happy that he didn't, because he's turned out 2 movies in a row. If you count Golden Circle, 2.5 movies in a row that are just almost unwatchable. So 3 on 10, and I think that's being generous for Argyle.
3 on 10 for the 3 minute and a retrospective podcast. Well, Adam's going to let his redhead biased No, I don't think he's going to go quite a 3. The 4 is yours. If you give this a 6, I'm going to lose my shit.
Sadly, she's only redhead for the first half of this film, you know, and then it changes. On the bright side, the second half of this film is considerably better than the first half. This film's all over the place. It's a mess. It is not clean. And none of Matthew Vaughn's films are clean, but this is very similar to The King's Man in that it almost feels like 2 different movies and they don't really gel together. The bright side, I like the people that I'm watching on screen in Sam Rockwell and Bryce Dallas more than I liked a lot of the people that I was watching in The King's Man. This movie needed a Rasputin-type element from Cranston, and we don't get it. This movie's amazingly subdued. I expected a PG-13 movie, and maybe I was a little more forgiving because of that. The movie thinks it's smarter than it is, or Vaughn just smells his own farts that he thinks he's smarter than he really is. Because I think he gave people ideas for sequences and said, now write me a film around this. It's got ideas, they're poorly done. It's got action sequences, they're all over the place, and they're inconsistent. Once this film hits its halfway point, and it's exactly halfway point, once I have to sit through a 10-minute explanation of where we have, the second half I get on board with. And I guess just luckily, I wasn't so pissed off by the first half that I was willing to stick around for the second half. I'm glad I didn't pay to see this in theaters, though, because I probably would have been turned off well before then. The second half doesn't redeem the first, but I enjoy the ride. It gets colorful, it gets fun. I like what it does. The two big sequences of action wise, the oil ice skating, yeah, it is stupid. It is fucking stupid as all hell, but I'm laughing because the colorful shoot 'em up sequence that is so much like the Suicide Squad and so much like the end of the first Kingsman, I'm chuckling. I'm enjoying myself. This isn't a good film though. And it is unfortunate that this franchise, if you want to call it that, peaked at the first and just paraglided off a cliff. And much like The King's Man, it forgot to bring the parachute along and it plummeted to the ground. I always said that I wanted him to see Vaughn do certain superhero movies. And I don't think I want that anymore. Though if he did Days of Future Past, maybe it would have been a better film. I don't hate this film, but I'm really disappointed because I think it could have been a lot more fun than it is. But I'm going to give it a 5. The second half fixes a lot of the problems I had with the first. But fuck, this thing is too long for what it is. It really is.
So I have to weigh my thoughts on this movie in totality. When I look at the money that was spent, the cast that was assembled, and the amount of my time that I felt was wasted, 2 hours and 20 minutes is a long time, much less for a comedy. I know it's got action elements and all that, but it's still over 2 hours, and there's no justification for any of it. I feel like everyone in this movie had their time wasted because they're not given anything interesting to do. I feel like Matthew Vaughn has diminishing returns as being kind when you look at these Kingsman movies, because I do think they get worse and worse by substantial margins, and I didn't like The Kingsman. I despise this movie. I think this is one of the worst movies of the last 5 years. When you look at, like I said, everything that went into it and the result, nowhere near justifying all that. People make fun of movies like Morbius and Kraven the Hunter. They're awful. And we'll talk about those in 30 years. And they get rebooted for the third time. But they're so shockingly bad that you can laugh at them on some levels. There's no enjoyment to be had in this, at least in my opinion, because A, I can't see color, so that does not fucking having all that colored rainbow tape Skittles commercial shootout at the end does nothing for me. Not only do I have no fetish for redheads, I don't find women attractive whatsoever. And Sam Rockwell, great actor, doesn't do it for me. Henry Cavill in that hairstyle is a turnoff because he's not wearing a mustache in a Superman costume. And it's 2 hours and 20 minutes and I barely laughed in a comedy, and I never sat there and watched, wow, this movie has some really good action in it. So you know what? This movie can go fuck itself, and it's a 2 out of 10.
That is one of the best summarizations you have ever done, sir. Bravo.
But I fucking hate this movie, and I'm pissed that we had to include it because of a scene that they shot at the very last minute, yeah. And you can't justify.
Yeah, that's just it. He can't justify it.
Garrett, for the record, one man made us add this film.
Well, I mean, I was just inquiring.
There's a reason why I was not happy when you recommended it. But I didn't want to show my hand too much, but I'm not in the minority. Maybe I feel a lot more strongly than certain people do, but we're not going to see one of this.
Here's the thing. This movie flopped in theaters, but it did really well on streaming, and there could be justification if he wants to continue this. But again, I'm going to plead to Matthew Vaughn, do something else, dude. Please expand your horizons. As long as it's not fantasy or the spy genre, do something different and get yourself back in good graces, because this is 2.5 films in a row where you have just shit the fucking bed.
The way that they piss away money on content, I'm surprised Apple hasn't given him a Kingsman TV series, because they waste billions on TV and they bring in nothing because of it.
They almost don't have a pot to piss in at this point, so I don't think they're going to waste any more money on anything else.
Yeah, the way tariffs are going,
exactly.
I think this franchise is dead in the water.
Do you? You don't think he's going to do anything else with this, Matt? You seriously think that?
I seriously think, you look at the people in this movie, you really think anyone's going to want to come back?
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, I think the Kingsman brand has kind of been tarnished by the last two movies, and I don't think there would be that clamoring, unless you got Taron Egerton to come back. I think that would instill some confidence in me, because he's gone on to do a lot of other stuff in the almost 10 years since. But how many times is Henry Cavill going to hitch his wagon to a shitty movie and come back?
And that supposedly is what is in the works. It's supposed to be like Eggsy 5 years after Golden Circle. I don't know if we're ever going to get it, but supposedly he says that is where Kingsman is going. I don't think it happens. And if it does, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a cheaper film and maybe that'll be good. I don't see a studio giving him $100 million, more or less 150 or two anymore.
No, not with the returns that this got.
Not between these last two films.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're going to leave Marvel in its own amnesiac state, because we got to take a break, especially after a lot of the movies in this retrospective. You know, you have to get through the crap, just based on how we design these shows. But speaking of crap, we're going back to Stephen King.
Here's the good news. The good news is that we have gotten through the treads of corn to lead up to this point. We are going back to Stephen King and hitting his late 70s, early 80s output that some would say is his best stuff. And we're going to debate that. You know, we're going to start off with The Stand, his epic 1,200-page novel that got two series based off of it. And there are people who say that to this day that it is still his best novel. I will get into that when we get to those shows. They are epic shows. We've already recorded one of them, and we're getting ready to record the other. It's going to be epic discussions about epic series. After The Stand, we are going to go to The Dead Zone with Christopher Walken, and I also get into a little bit of the Anthony Michael Hall starring TV show they did on USA. We talk about that a little bit at the end of that show. We go from there to Firestarter, which we're going to include the Drew Barrymore film from 1984, and we're including the 2022 remake of it starring Zac Efron. We were going to include Firestarter Rekindled, but if anyone out there knows where we can see that fucking thing, please let me know, because I have looked everywhere for it. I can't get a copy on Amazon. I can't do anything to get these guys to fucking watch the goddamn thing. So that is going to be put on the back burner for now. So we are going to include the two actual films they did. And then from there, well, we're going to continue it with Cujo, the 1983 movie starring Dee Wallace, which is also getting a remake pretty soon. So we're going to talk about that. And we're concluding it with A Dandy. We're concluding it with the first Richard Bachman book to be made into a film, and God, is there a story behind that. We're going to conclude it with The Running Man, and I know Matt has been aching to talk about Arnold since we tore him a new one with Batman and Robin. A lot of people say this is Arnold's prime. I would agree with that. This is right in the midst of the Arnold powers that he possessed. 4 years before Terminator 2, here he is, the same year as Predator, he did The Running Man, and God, is there a discussion to be had there. So that is going to be our upcoming slate. We're going to lead up to a theatrical release after that, but set of Stephen King book adaptations, and we're getting further into his bibliography, and I'm most excited to talk about this set of films, because some would say this was his best prime.
Great. So until next time, when we go back to Stephen King, go back to Marvel, and do the rest of the stuff we have outlined for this year, until next week, we review The Stand 1994. According to the podcast, to keep another secret is a divinely mandated duty. Thank you, guys.
I know what you're going to say.
I should be proud of myself because I'm finally using my gift for something important.
No, I was just going to tell you your fly was down for the whole show.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Congratulations. Bloody well done.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
You're right about the snobs, but there too, there are exceptions.
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice.
Pretty fucking great.
It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
How was that? Not so bad. Kind of fun, huh?
Check out the Percolated Media Archives, as we have tons of franchise reviews, including films of the DC Universe featuring Superman and Batman, The Incredibles movies, the Planet of the Apes franchise,
the Lethal Weapon films, the Alien franchise,
Jurassic Park, and so many more.
Okay, you cunts. Let's see what you can do now.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
Words to live by, Exit. Words to live by.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
As long as your heart's in the right place, we don't care what you put in your mouth.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
I feel like a tornado in a trailer park.
Scheduling done by Matt.
And
trying to figure out how to explain this without sounding like a complete idiot right now.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Playtime's over, kid.
I never play.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
What the fuck are you doing here? You taking a piss?
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is a Percolated Media production. All rights reserved, and no copyright infringement is intended.
You really believe in all this?
I believe that when a man's chest becomes an insect's palace, when his eyes are gone and his limbs ain't there no more, when I'm so scared I want to handcuff myself to my bed to keep from coming to work. Yeah, I believe it, man. I believe I don't want to die, Sheriff.
For something we'll discuss in the future, but to me, it shows, and the perfect example is like Deadpool and Deadpool 2.
And they're trying to do this like Romancing the Stone because of the writer component.
It's Mission Impossible 2. Sorry, early shot for a future retrospective.
I mean, you laugh, but I don't think this movie's, we'll get into it a couple months down the road because that's coming up. Bryan Cranston walks in as their...
The different random people.
Till next week when we review The Stand, 1994?
Four, yeah.
Till next week when we review The Stand, 1994.